Two, one. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Inner Man Show. I'm your host, Dylan Eckes. I'm here with my good friend and co-host, bestie, brother from another mother, Shane.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. We have a guest in studio.
We do.
You want to introduce him?
Sure.
Okay, cool.
Well, we have a guest in studio. He's a little nervous, but I think he's going to do fantastic. Tony Leahy, he is running for city council. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
You're running for mayor.
I'm running for mayor.
Bro, this is intense.
It is time for a change in the city.
Absolutely. So why don't you give the listeners a little introduction of who you are, Tony?
Well, I'm born and raised in this city. Grew up in Northwest Crescent Heights. Was educated by the Catholic school board. Went to St. Michael's, then to St. Mary's, then to McCoy. Graduated in 03. Then went to college at Tomasnak College for policing. Graduated in 07. And during the summer of 07, I was lucky enough to apply and get a job with the Municipal Works Department.
Cool.
So at that time, I started with the patch crew, paving crew, jackhammer crew, you name it. I took care of the bridges and roads. Did that for about 5 years. Stayed on with the city, obviously, because it was such a great job. After Municipal Works, I went to the Esplanade, Culture and Development.
Yeah.
There, I was blessed to help the community out during events like weddings and social events. I was in charge of maintenance, small maintenance for after the shows and after the plays. So I got to see a lot of performances.
Awesome.
Yeah. Awesome.
Like different concerts and stuff like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. That was probably out of all the jobs I had with the city, that was the funnest one.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And then during that time, I was lucky enough to get on to building services. So part of corporate assets management, They paid for my fifth class power engineering.
Cool.
Which is a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I became operator of city buildings.
Awesome.
So
what year is this roughly?
This would be 2013. I became an operator.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So part of my job then was total infrastructure of buildings. So I was in charge of airport maintenance and infrastructure, all the parks, the Municipal Works Department, Fleet Services.
So you're overseeing quite a bit.
So I'm overseeing basically other departments rented from corporate assets management.
Right.
And we were kind of the landlord.
Okay.
So any issues, building services got the call first, and then we would respond.
Okay.
So dealing with boilers, electric panels, you name it.
Right.
Filters. So that was all under our scope.
Okay.
And then I worked high enough to see where money was being spent. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't being fulfilled emotionally, I guess you could say, with my job. I wasn't happy coming home.
Right.
I wasn't enjoying it. Mm-hmm. And I think at the end, when I was in charge of buildings, I wasn't seeing people enough. I wasn't helping out people. I was just fixing buildings, and I wasn't connecting with the people like I was at Municipal Works, you know, fixing someone's driveway in front of their house, or, you know, helping a wedding out at the Esplanade. Mm-hmm. It was different. Mm-hmm. So,
felt a disconnect from people.
Right. Yeah. So in 2015, I decided to get my, license in real estate, and, I quit the city. And ever since then, I have been licensed in residential and, commercial real estate.
Right on.
I have, two small children. John, who is going to be 3 on the 15th of August. And I have Scarlett, who is going to be 7 in November. And I have a beautiful wife, Sonia, who is a grade 1 teacher with the public school board here.
Right on, man.
So, yeah.
So you have this feeling that, you know, the city has given a lot to you.
Oh, and they've, this city's helped raise me.
Right.
100%.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And now it's time to give back, right?
Now it's time to give back. I didn't see myself at this age running for mayor until I started seeing what was happening with our city. And I'm very, very concerned. And I believe that if I'm not in the mayor's chair for the next 4 years, Medicine Hat's going to look like a scary place.
That's fair enough.
So that's why I'm running. I'm not doing it for me, to be honest with you. I'm doing it for the people of the city. I feel really concerned of where the city's going.
Sure.
Well, I know I, as I've been born and raised in this town slash city, I was in Redcliffe myself, but, I definitely feel the feeling of being, born and raised that
absolutely
in this city, it really brings out the thought process of wanting to help out and do your part the as a community member.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So it, like you mentioned, like for us, we've had so many good things come our way.
Right.
It's time to give back. So
100%.
I'm really, really curious about some of these issues that are, you know, in your mind and what's out there that you were thinking that it could be you're the right fit to avoid these terrible situations for the city.
Well, my goal is to bring back that sense of community. So not that long ago, growing up, I used to be able to walk from Bassett Crescent Northwest to the Town Theater or the Monarch with my friend and feel completely safe. Mm-hmm. Not have to worry about people jumping me or what's downtown. Mm-hmm. Something changed. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is. Is it the caring in our municipal government? What was it? But there's definitely a sense of loss in the city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was talking to my dad recently about this, and that was one of the things that I've noticed when I moved back to Medicine Hat, and it's been expedited because of COVID, of course.
Right.
But like, I remember growing up as a kid, we lived in the flats the first 8 years of my life, and I would just jump on my BMX and just ride all over the place.
Yeah.
Wherever I wanted to go in the flats, I was safe. I was good.
Exactly.
You know, and now when I lived down there before I moved last year, I wouldn't let my kids down the block.
No.
And that's a scary thought. You know, as a parent, and like, you kind of question yourself, am I a helicopter parent? Like, am I just, and then you start looking around and you're like, no, things are different. Cause I didn't notice these type of things as a kid.
Well, here's an instance of how things are different. So I know of teachers that have to go check playground equipment now in the mornings for drug paraphernalia.
Yeah.
Yep.
And they find them and not downtown.
Right.
All over the city.
Right.
Parks. Mm-hmm. Everywhere.
Exactly.
Every park.
I live in Ross Glen. I live across a park, and there are people that live under the trees, and they do drugs under the trees, and it's right by a playground equipment where kids play every day. So that wasn't there 15, 10 years ago. Why is it happening now? Obviously, something's not being addressed.
Right.
Right. It's almost like this city's been threatened by this council and those threats have affected us. You know,
when you say threats, what do you mean by that?
Like, well,
funding, like
everything. You talk about health and wellness for our city. They have threatened to sell off our power generation, which is not theirs. That's the people's. That's the people's power generation, not mine. They've threatened to lay off first responders. I'm not sure if a lot of people remember that, but that was very, very likely to happen. And then I think they remembered that there was an election this year. And all of a sudden that disappeared. And they've threatened to take out our recreation facilities in our communities.
Like the pools.
The pools, the skating rinks. Yeah. I know for a fact that if I didn't have Hockey Hounds and Crescent Heights Pool, I wouldn't have learned to swim.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have learned to play hockey, and I wouldn't have met lifelong friends doing it.
Yeah.
And that would have had a major impact on my mental health.
We talked about that recently with the Redcliffe Youth Center.
Oh yeah.
If it wasn't for, you know, Shane Express, I mean, me.
Yeah, I grew up there my entire life, and that was kind of the place for us to go. And, you know, we still got in trouble, and we still did dumb kid stuff, right? And but nothing malicious, nothing.
Right.
But and I truly do believe because of the Reckliffe Youth Center, there was a place for us to go.
100%.
And the pool and the BMX track, those were our three kind of rotations out. So like we were getting the physical activity. We had the lifelong friend. Like I grew up from kindergarten with the same kids that I grew up when I graduated in grade 12.
Me too.
Yeah. So, when you, and I played hockey with these kids and I, you know, you swim, you bike, you do everything.
Yeah.
You build
up together, right?
Yeah.
Right.
You build.
It's a community.
Yeah.
It's your
100%.
There's more than one community. There's neighborhood communities in Medicine Hat that I think are very important that we're losing very rapidly.
Mm-hmm. If we didn't have those programs in Redcliffe, I was also on the path growing up where I was on the fence. I was either going to go down the right path or I was going to go down the very, very wrong path.
Yep.
And I really do think those testament of having those things in place really was pushing me along the right way. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had a lot of good individuals in my life to help me out as well. Yeah. So I'm not going to discount that, but to not think about it, if you have nowhere to go, what are you going to do? You're bored. What are you going to think to do?
Mm-hmm. Well, kids are curious.
And when you're a 10-year-old boy, you're going to find fire.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
And sticks and ants and you name
rocks.
It.
Yeah.
And rocks.
And, yeah. And you think about like how that correlates to mental health. You know, when we were talking with Bamboo Shoots, when we were doing the shoots for the Redcliffe Youth Center, that's one of the things that we discussed was like, when you give kids a sense of community and camaraderie, and you give proper role models and programs in place, it protects their mental health. It protects their physical health and it gives them a purpose. Once you start taking a purpose away and once you start taking, you know, if little Johnny can't go to the swimming pool or if he can't go to the skate park, right?
Yeah.
Well, what are you going to do as a parent too?
Right.
It's exactly. Like, are we just supposed to walk around the city?
Right.
And it's just like, and they're already starting to take more and more pathways away. So it's just like, you know, this is something that we really need to start taking it. This isn't just for physical health. It's about giving our kids a purpose and making them feel like they're part of the community. Because when we were growing up, and this is a testament for what we're doing now, you're running for mayor, we're running nonprofits. Mm-hmm. What we're trying to do is we're trying to give purpose back to our community because we realized how important community was growing up. Right. Yep. So now we're stuck at this turning point where a lot of what we're seeing now is a lack of empathy, a lack of education, and a lack of purpose.
Right.
Well, and now more than ever with the COVID lockdowns and all that stuff, like that sense of community is already ripped away from us.
Yeah.
And then you take away the only things that have the possibility of building it back together. Right. Like we're just going to be that divide that everyone's seeing right now is just going to grow.
You learn so much from team sports and being involved in athletic anything, learning how to lose is important.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Learning how to get knocked down and get back up.
Mm-hmm. Work as a team.
All those things you're going to lose. Listen to these kids.
Yeah.
100%. Exactly. Respect get a penalty. Yeah. Right. Without going off on them.
Yeah.
You learn those in sports and recreation. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to teach them or they're going to learn the hard way in school. And that's going to have an effect on the teachers and the principals and other kids around them. And it's just going to have a snowball effect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's a negative snowball effect because once you start taking away, and this is kind of getting a little off topic, but once you start taking away competition and recreation and winning and losing, and once you start taking camaraderie away, well then respect just goes out the window. So then not only are you left with a generation that has no purpose, but then you're left with a generation that feels entitled that they are owed something and have no respect for elders or other people in their community. Right.
Right.
So it's just a vicious cycle. And I think what ends up happening is you get people that are put in power. And this is what we talked to Allison about this. People think that politician means big and powerful and greedy. Right. And what politician's supposed to mean is community service.
Yeah.
What? Right. And so, you know, it's
so here's something I want people to see to know right now is that if and when I am elected mayor, I have 65,000 bosses. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not the boss of you. You are the boss of me. Mm-hmm. I represent you. Mm-hmm. That is my job.
Yeah.
I don't care if you're black, brown, Hispanic, gay, straight, women, LGBTQ. Mm-hmm. If you live in this city, mm-hmm. you are just as important to me as anybody else.
Right.
You're totally. Very, very important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that sense right now is gone.
You right.
know, I've talked to several community representatives mm-hmm. that are running for council or mayor, and what me and Shane have noticed is like the conversation with all of you has been the same. Mm-hmm. There is a lack of transparency and a lack of right. due diligence and actual care for the community. Right.
I don't know how many people right now in this city actually trust mm-hmm. our municipal government.
Mm-hmm. To be honest, I mean, my dad says it best, you know, it's always been like this. We just have social media, which is kind of true.
Right. Yeah.
But what social media is doing is it's holding the feet to the fire.
Right.
Right. It's holding people accountable. So,
right.
So when you come on this podcast, Tony, in 4 years, if you don't do what we said, you can say, hey, he said this.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's the right. important thing, right? Yep. Because ownership and accountability is what we talk about all the time. That's gone right now.
Yeah.
Right.
The only goal I want to see and the only goal I have as running for mayor is to make the citizens of this city happier mm-hmm. and healthier.
And mm-hmm. proud.
100%.
Right.
That should be a given. Mm-hmm. See, we're talking about things that should be givens. Mm-hmm. Transparency.
Right.
We shouldn't even have to talk about that.
Right.
It should be, we are as transparent as a plastic pig.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
I mean, there should be nothing hidden.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Why are things being hidden? Why are things in this city being so quickly to decisions on these major, major projects are being given maybe 12 hours, 2 weeks to decide on. Mm-hmm. That's not enough time. There hasn't been any feedback from the community, mm-hmm. especially on these three things I just discussed. Mm-hmm. I was never asked about how do you feel about Hockey Hounds and Crescent Heights mm-hmm. swimming pool.
Yeah, they just did way. It.
They just,
yeah.
just like, we're going to do it.
Yeah. Like why?
Right.
What's the point?
And here's another problem with that is, I can't think of one person who would want that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you live in this city, who would want these facilities taken away from you? Mm-hmm. It doesn't make logical sense. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing really wrong with the structure of these buildings.
So let me play devil's advocate. The logical side of things would be everything moves to the Family Leisure Center.
Okay.
Is that what I'm gathering from this? Like,
or privatize
it.
Right. Or put a new complex right by the co-op place, I guess. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about Southridge? What about the people
that don't have Ross access Glen? To transportation and
people who have two hardworking caregivers in the house? Mm-hmm. They're not going to be driving 15 minutes, 20 minutes for a 15 minute play date.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. They're not.
It's true. It's true. We live up in the Connaught area and, we have yet to take our kids to the leisure center right. for a play day. Cause it's like, well, that's just so out of the way.
And it's expensive.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're not even getting that cost. Yeah. I mean, it's $45 if you want to take your family.
And not only that, it's intimidating for a lot of young kids. Yep. You know what I mean? They walk in, they see this huge building. And like right. I have two kids.
You don't
one
know
loves
go.
It and is excited. Right. The other one's
yeah.
terrified.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, when I think of my time walking into the Reckliffe pool mm-hmm. and a lot of like the Crestwood pool and all right. that stuff, it's the same type of
feeling. It was old and dingy, but you felt like it was home.
It was home. Yeah. It was warm. Home. It was welcoming. Yep. It was like, oh, this is like the lifeguards knew right. you by name.
Right.
And you could do like they were like an extra set of eyes Dude. For you.
And the thing is, when I was in building services, I was in charge of some of these buildings.
Yeah.
So I know the actual structure, there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The bones are
the
good.
The complex just smells like shit.
Right. Yeah. The bones are fine.
Yeah.
It has to be upgraded.
Right.
So tell me.
Or maintained or cleaned.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
So what's going to cost more? Mm-hmm. A huge complex being built with current material costs mm-hmm. or upgrading current centers that were built 40 years ago mm-hmm. that didn't cost half of what they would have cost now, mm-hmm. upgrading them and making them make sense to our community.
Well, it just comes down to common sense, Tony, and what we're saying. It
comes down to caring.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And common sense and caring and understanding your community. You know, we were talking about the incentive of doing things you know, on 12 hours notice or 2 weeks notice. And either way, it's not enough time to think about it. The thing is, and this is what Allison was speaking of when she was in here, is a lot of city council members, they get in and they think of the next 4 years. You got to think of the next 20 to 40.
Yeah.
Because what you're doing now is going to take generations to fix.
Right.
So if we spend, you know, millions of dollars in this infrastructure, well, now it's in place.
Yep.
Now we got to maintain it. Now we got to take care of it. We got to maintenance it. And then, so what we're doing now is going to affect our kids. Our kids are roughly all the same age between that, you know, 10 and, you know, 1 year old mark. Sure. Right. So in the net, and that's a small gap when you think of age, right? Yeah. So we're talking about the next generation of children.
Right. And that's another reason why I'm running. I'm not thinking about the next 4 years. I'm thinking about the next 40 years.
Mm-hmm. Your own kids.
My own kids. And where are they going to go? Exactly. I never left Medicine Hat because I always thought Medicine Hat was the best city to live in.
There's a reason for it.
Right? I agree. 100%. I've had tons of friends.
I have also lived other places. I had tons of friends that
left, went to Calgary, went to Vancouver. Oh, I'm going to live the life. They all came back.
Yeah.
They all came back. Right.
Yeah.
This is the best city still, in my opinion, to raise a family and to live.
I agree.
That is quickly fading.
It is very much so. Obviously there's not much I can talk about on my my employment and everything like that, but I see it every day. I see everything, the gap closing between, you know, sanity and just people that are making the wrong calls and not allocating money in the right places. And I'm seeing the destruction unfold in front of me. I'm seeing the people struggling and I see what the people need.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing that all getting ripped away every single day. And it's just getting worse.
Well, and the thing that I was bringing up today with, I was actually speaking with another city councilwoman. She's running. And one of the things that I was explaining to her, and she didn't even realize this was, you know, we were talking about this earlier too, was the economic discrepancy.
Right.
And the wage, the income discrepancy in our city. And when I was in financial services, the person doesn't realize how rough some people have it. Mm-hmm. We're talking a swath of our population is living in poverty.
Right.
And a swath of our population is living in a massive amount of wealth.
Right.
And so there's, like I was explaining to Shane recently, like our middle class is very small.
And I've seen that too in real estate.
Yeah.
So I've seen enlisted houses over $1 million. Mm-hmm. And I've also shown people fixer-uppers where the tenants are in there still suffering from addiction and walk downstairs and there's a individual suffering and sleeping on a mat in the corner.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's very seldom now that you see a middle ground.
Yeah.
And then the people that are in the middle ground, a lot of them are struggling with massive loads of debt that are slowly sinking into that poverty level again.
Right. Yeah.
I see that happening more now. Obviously this COVID hasn't helped. And if you want to take a look, you go up to Briar Park. So when the barrel or a barrel of oil was what, -$1?
Yep.
Years or a year back, Briar Park just went vacant,
fell apart.
Yeah. So if you still go up to Briar Park, the vacancies there are astronomical.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if you think about everybody who had a job there, doesn't now.
Yeah.
Everybody, not everybody got a job back, especially during COVID.
Right.
And they are all suffering.
And that's a booming
and
area.
A lot of those people have never suffered in their career
ever,
ever. Mm-hmm. They're used to making their boat payments, their mortgage payments.
Right.
And so they work hard. They should.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, boom, gone.
Yeah. Right. And now they got a boat payment, ATV payment, trailer payment, mortgage.
It happened 07 too.
Yeah. And you're like sitting there going, I guess you got to have it back.
Right.
Right.
So it's, you see it everywhere in this town.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Tony, what you've spoken to us in private and if you're comfortable, why don't you tell us a little bit of your story here?
Sure.
Because our show is based on personal development, mental health.
Right.
You've actually suffered from some mental illness and mental health issues in your life as well.
So I have suffered from anxiety, and because of anxiety, depression came with it. Mm-hmm. not every, that doesn't happen with everybody. Sometimes depression comes and anxiety comes with it, or sometimes you don't have anxiety, or sometimes you don't have depression.
Yeah. Yeah. They're pretty linked together for a lot of times though. Yeah.
So I got my first anxiety that I didn't know what it was. I'm sure I had anxiety attacks growing up.
Mm-hmm. You're a kid, don't recognize it.
Right.
Yep.
But I remember my first panic attack was in college and scared me. Nothing major. Went to the doctor. He said it was just a panic attack. I went on with my life. Started having some family issues regarding a sibling around 2008. And it really affected me. Me and my sibling were best friends. Mm-hmm. Grew up together. Basically, all we had together was each other. And it was going south very quickly to the point where she was getting multiple doctors to write her multiple prescriptions. Mm-hmm. So most of the time she was out of it. Mm-hmm. Me and my wife were getting married in May of 2012. I went over to see my sister the day before, just to give her kind of a heads up to kind of just behave. Just, this is an important day for me. Don't come all screwed up, please. Yeah, yeah. She came upstairs and she was so screwed up that she thought the stove was on and she was cooking a pizza. Mm-hmm. That stove hadn't been turned on for months. Mm-hmm. At that point, I had to make the decision, a very difficult decision, to uninvite my sister to my wedding. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I told my mother to go to the hospital with my sister, which she did. She opened up a drawer and there was a Safeway bag full of doctor prescriptions, which took my breath away. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't believe that this was happening. How can a doctor or doctors write these many prescriptions and not know that she's on these many other prescriptions?
Right.
Now I know it's called doctor shopping. I had no idea what it was called before. Mm-hmm. Go to emergency, walk in, talk to both physicians at emergency, tell them my story, tell them what I noticed about my sister. They looked at me and apologized, saying, there's nothing we can do. She's going to be going home within 4 hours and her life will just continue on as it is.
Yeah.
Which infuriated me.
Mm-hmm. That's your sister.
That's my sister. It's my best friend. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the way it was going, I couldn't be around her because I'm not going to affect my mental health that way.
That's important.
Right.
That's important for people to hear.
And you have to step away sometimes.
Yep.
So I did. I tried my best. And then August, about 2 months after I was married, that and a bunch of other childhood trauma and bull crap, nothing major, just, you know, came from a single parent house, mm-hmm. you name it, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I held it in.
Carried it with you.
I carried it with me.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that if you carry it with you, it's going to come out. It's going to come out in a way that you don't decide.
One way or another,
it'll
come get you.
And I came home. I was working for the city. And I came home one day. And I had no panic attacks, no nothing for years. And I sat on my couch. And all of a sudden, it felt like I was having an out-of-body experience. Mm-hmm. The best way to feel it or describe it. And I kind of snapped out of it and I went, whoa, I've never experienced that. What's going on? I didn't know if I was dying. I didn't know if I was having a heart attack. I didn't know what was going on.
Right.
And didn't think anything of it. Went to work the next day. And one of my jobs at that point was taking care of the parkade, transit parkade upstairs, downtown. Mm-hmm. The whole building, I'd have to clean it and make sure there was no garbage or anything. So I would drive my truck all the way up to the transit parkade. Then all of a sudden, my conscience said, Tony, don't go over to that edge and jump. Don't even think about it. Mm-hmm. And I went, I wasn't thinking about that. Mm-hmm. Why would that just pop in my head right away?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like that's very, very strange.
Yeah.
Yep. And it scared me. I was scared to even just walk to the edge because I didn't know if my legs were going to jump over. I had no idea what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank God I have an amazing family physician in town, Dr. Flanty. I'm sure he doesn't mind me saying his name. Called him up right away, told him I was having these issues.
Yeah.
And saw him the next day. Mm-hmm. He put me on an antidepressant and took me off work for a month. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started getting help. Mm-hmm. And ever since then, it's been a game changer.
Right.
Really. Mm-hmm. Telling professionals your issues. Mm-hmm. You may not feel like it's going to solve anything, but the second you walk out that door, you just feel like 100 pounds lighter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Relieved, right.
Relieved that someone knows your story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that no one's judging you.
And every time you go, it's a little bit less of a
burden. Less, right. And once you tell someone's story mm-hmm. and you don't get judged, you feel like you can tell someone else your story
right.
and not get judged. Right? Right. So it opens up a bunch of doors. Mm-hmm. Like this is the first time a lot of people in this city are going to hear this.
Right. Right.
But and we appreciate you sharing.
Right. It's time. It's time that other people in the city know that they're not the only ones going through this.
Well, here's the biggest thing, right? It's like, we've talked about, we have a podcast coming out. It's pre-recorded, but, what is vulnerability? Like what are we doing with it? Right.
Right.
And so when you can show vulnerability as a sign of strength and a sign of, hey, I have these issues too. Right.
And guys, I'm still here.
Yeah. And you guys aren't alone.
Yeah.
And look what I can do.
Right.
And if I can do it, that means you can do it because I was in the same spot as
you. If you are struggling right now and you feel like you can't see that daylight.
Right.
It's because your head's down and you're crawling. Mm-hmm. Keep moving forward.
Yeah.
Because eventually you're going to get out of that tunnel. Mm-hmm. And when you do, you're going to feel so much relief. Right. You've never felt it like anything in your life before.
Right.
It's just the stress is right off your back.
So how long was your recovery? Like, are you still in recovery right now? Are you?
I don't know the definition of that. Recover. I guess I feel like I'm always going to have a sensitivity to anxiety.
Right.
I'm sure I'll have to deal with that the rest of my life.
Right.
Now looking back, I've dealt with it my whole life.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now it's a lot easier to identify.
I know what it is.
Right.
So I grew up in a single parent house. My mom was a 911 operator. Mm-hmm. It was me, my sister, and my mom. And I'll tell you what, at the early age of 4, I felt like I had to protect them.
Right.
And the second it got dark, mm-hmm. it was my responsibility. Obviously it wasn't, but tell that to me at 4 years old, it was my responsibility to protect them. Mm-hmm. So I was always on alert.
Right.
Always on alert. The second that door shut, it was time to go to bed. That second that hallway light turned off, my job started. The man of the house, and I have to protect him. Yeah. And I remember
it's a weird instinct, isn't it?
It is, but I remember feeling like, okay, mm-hmm. it's your job now. Mm-hmm. And I was always on alert.
Yeah.
And that's,
it's funny saying that because you're a little 4 year old boy.
Yeah.
My 4 year old. I'm like,
right. Yeah.
But it's, I get it and I understand it because I understand what it means to want to protect.
Sure.
And when you feel insecure, because that's you as a young boy feeling insecurity.
Right.
Right. And you don't realize how much pressure you're putting on yourself.
Oh, tons. Right.
And it comes to fruition through anxiety.
I see it now as I have a 4 year old son who the last thing he's thinking of is how do I protect my family? Right. he doesn't have to think about that at all.
That's kudos to you as being a father.
That's Thank you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They are not scared of the outside world one bit. Mm-hmm. I was terrified of it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because I was worried about losing my sister, losing my mother.
Right.
What would happen if I did lose them, mm-hmm. the outcomes mm-hmm. I was, it was, it was nerve wracking.
Right.
So
now with your mental health experience, what is your goal once you become mayor for mental health and different community programs here in Medicine Hat?
Well, first off, the number one goal is to make sure we take care of the people in imminent life-threatening situations. So suicides, drug overdoses.
Which are often correlated.
Here's the kicker. When we talk about opiates, a lot of these people never did a drug in their life.
Yeah.
They suffered from an injury. They suffered from, right.
Yeah.
They suffered from a surgery or a car accident. They were athletes.
Yeah. For those of you who think I'm twitching all the time, cause I've seen the comments, that's me adjusting. Cause I'm still messed up.
Yeah. So when a doctor prescribes you this, a doctor's giving you this, you think that it's okay. First off, it's okay for you. And that the doctor wouldn't give you anything that is going to harm you.
Right. Totally.
Right.
It's the first thought.
You're given that for 2 weeks. You're supposed to take an opiate for 2 weeks. Good luck getting off that.
Well, and here's the thing that people don't think about. It's just like, okay, so when I was prescribed Percocet.
Right.
And
same with my sister.
And basically what it was to take the pain away in my neck.
Right.
I was in a fender bender.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yep.
A fender bender in 2013. And from 2013 till the middle of 2017. So for about 4 years, I was hooked on painkillers.
Right.
And it was literally whatever I could get my hands on. And
did you ever use needles?
No, I never used needles. But I mean, between Xanax and Percocet, I mean, you're spending like $100 a day.
Right.
If the opportunity was to arise, do you think you would have?
No, because you know what my thought process was? Going back to what you had talked about, you said, you know, when you're growing up, you were dealing with mental health issues, but you made fun of it, right?
Right.
So it was insecurity.
Yeah.
My thought process was, if I use a needle, I'm a loser.
Yeah, right.
So I didn't want to be a junkie.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, idiot, as you're taking a mouthful of pills, right?
But prescribed.
This is better.
Oh, a doctor wrote a prescription for this. It's not a needle.
Totally.
Well, it's just, but when you get addicted, it's not like you are wanting to do that.
Well, and then
it's not like some people went, oh, I can't wait to stick a needle in my arm.
Right. Yeah. And in 2016, I remember this is how silly I was and how young I was. But also how uneducated I was about mental health and addiction. I read a study about how people with addiction can get off of their pills using ketamine. And I was like, I'll just self-medicate using ketamine.
Right.
And now I'm hooked on K.
Right.
And I'm like, oh my God. Like every time I turn around, it's just a vicious cycle. Yep. I'm not a junkie. I'm not addicted to it.
It's a band-aid.
So for me, I literally had to rip the band-aid off. Mm-hmm. I accidentally overdosed. Mm-hmm. I was out cold for about 20 hours and I woke up. I had driven home. I didn't know how I got home. I couldn't believe I drove home. I was messed up the night before drinking on top of all the pills I was taking every day. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, I need to. And it was a rough month, man.
Right.
It was horrifying. And I remember sitting in the sauna crying in my condo. I remember going on walks at 3 a.m. because I hadn't slept in 4 days. And I was every day I was putting on 3 or 4 outfits because I was sweating so much and I was having nightmares and you fucking name it, man. Mm-hmm. That was my life for a month. And I thought to myself, well, I'm not a junkie because I'm not injecting myself. I'm not like doing coke, so I don't have a coke problem. I'm not a cokehead, and I'm not drinking. Like I drink maybe like once a year, twice a year.
Right.
So I don't have a problem. That was my I work in corporate offices downtown Calgary.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem, and it's just like I had a legitimate issue for 4 years.
Sure, that's it. It catches up with you, right? Mm-hmm. It's my doctor said I could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My doctor still thinks I could. Oh, my doctor thinks I have a problem. Mm-hmm. My doctor's not prescribing anything anymore. Mm-hmm. Now I'm on the street looking for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's how it happens.
Totally.
I took my children swimming at the leisure center a few years ago. I jumped off the high dive. Bad mistake. Mm-hmm. I forgot I weighed an extra 100 pounds. My feet hit the bottom of the pool. Okay. My eardrum shatters.
Yeah.
I swim back up.
You're over 30.
I'm over the second you get, I hit 30. I swear, the second after 30, you fall apart. So my eardrum ruptures, huge pain, go home, don't think anything of it. Then stuff starts leaking out of my ear. I'm like, okay, start getting a fever, go to the hospital. He goes, oh, you ruptured your eardrum. It must be very painful. I said, yeah. He goes, I'm going to give you antibiotics
right.
and pain medication. Brings me back an opioid. Mm-hmm. I said, I don't want any part of that. Mm-hmm. Rip that up right now.
Yeah.
It's that is how easily mm-hmm. you can go from living a normal life in this town mm-hmm. to ending up in the street and sticking needles in your arm.
I knew guys, and I will never say names, obviously, mm-hmm. but I knew guys working downtown Calgary that were on heroin and they were living a normal life driving a freaking Porsche.
You would be surprised.
Yeah.
There's tons of that in Massanutten right now.
Functioning addicts.
Functioning yeah. addicts.
And I know the opposite, maybe a little bit too much TMI, but I had to go get a colonoscopy 2 years ago. I have to because of colon cancer in my family. And the gentleman across from me, young kid, must have been not even 30. He looked at the lady and he said, I don't want to go under because I'm afraid I'll relapse.
Yeah.
And he went and did a colonoscopy without any medications or yeah. going under. And I was like, wow, that's like, first of all, you're tough as a cookie, man.
Yeah.
Second of all, that's kudos to you for right. not wanting to go under, right?
But think about how much fear
yeah.
he's riddled with too.
Totally.
Right? Yeah. And that's going to be the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. God forbid he has a heart attack or anything else, and he has to be put under something mm-hmm. yeah. if he breaks a bone. When I had my shoulder surgery a year ago, mm-hmm. I was given T3s. I was given 80 of them. Mm-hmm. I still have 65 of them in that container because mm-hmm. I suck it up. I sucked it up and I didn't want to take them.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. I was worried.
Yeah.
I don't want to end up like my family members. Mm-hmm. And what fentanyl and all the opioids do is they block receptors. Mm-hmm. So if you're feeling any mental pain, mm-hmm. it blocks that out too. Mm-hmm. It's very good at blocking all pain out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's why we have a pandemic and an epidemic in this city. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it feels like
we have an epidemic in almost every major hub.
Mm. Right. I would say
like,
but this, real. I wouldn't even call this a major hub. This is a small city mm-hmm. and we have major city issues.
Yeah, we do.
And we don't need them.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Because we have the capability of dealing with that.
So understanding all of these, you know, issues with mental health mm-hmm. and addictions and, you know, the thing that I've been told and I've actually realized, through my work and everything is we are about 10, 15 years behind every city regarding okay. major drug use.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So like every 10 or 15 years, we'll start using fentanyl. Fentanyl has been around for
sure.
so long. Totally. It's just yeah. new to the
city. Just like I used to grow up watching Spokane News.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm sure you did too.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was a meth problem in Spokane
yeah.
in the early 2000s.
And everyone was like, what the heck is meth?
Yeah. And I thought, I hope that never makes its way up here.
Mm-hmm. And now here we are. It's very prevalent.
Exactly.
Yep. And like it's the cost, like the high lasts forever. Mm-hmm. It costs virtually nothing. Mm-hmm. It's accessible anywhere you go.
Right.
So knowing all of these things, what would you like to see when you're elected mayor, if elected mayor?
For fentanyl use?
To fight drug addiction and mental health all in one.
Okay.
What would you like to see?
So right now, I believe we have very capable mental health professionals in this city. Mm-hmm. I've spoken to many of them. Mm-hmm. They're great at what they do.
Absolutely.
They feel handcuffed just as much as the population does.
Mm-hmm. I think that needs to be expressed too. What Tony right. is saying here is, and we've spoken to professionals too, when they say they're handcuffed, they're overwhelmed, they're understaffed.
They're being told what to do by Edmonton.
Yeah. And now all of a sudden
cutting funding.
Look at the 3% of nurses or the 3% funding. They want to cut nurses off. What's next?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's gonna be mental health professionals.
Yeah. And so now what we're seeing is like when Tony says that there's a lot of guys that come to our peer and are in our private forum and online that simply say, well, no one's helping us. Well, I hate to say it, but like they're literally to the point, especially in small towns like Medicine Hat, where they have no other options. They're right. strapped. Yep. When you talk to some of these psychologists and therapists, they're seeing 10, 12 people a day.
You had someone here a few weeks ago that had to go either wait 3 months here mm-hmm. or go to Lethbridge.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah. I also
is that how we're treating our citizens here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also believe we do have a lot of resources that are not prevalent. They're not well known and they're underutilized. Yeah.
I, I've lived here my whole life.
Well, we were just talking before the podcast.
Yeah. If I had an issue, if my wife left me right now, if God forbid something happened, that I'm not suicidal, but I'm still suffering. Mm-hmm. Right now, where do I go?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you wouldn't know exactly.
I would not know where to go. Mm-hmm. It's past 6 o'clock right now. Mm-hmm. Everything's closed. Mm-hmm. The only option I have is to go to the hospital or call 911, mm-hmm. have the police officers attend. Mm-hmm. If they think I'm a risk to myself or others, they're going to put me in handcuffs. Mm-hmm. They're going to escort me in the back of a police car mm-hmm. to the hospital. Mm-hmm. They're going to put me in a sealed room mm-hmm. so I can't harm myself or others. Mm-hmm. I'm going to wait in that room for 3 to 4 hours, just like everybody else in the waiting room, mm-hmm. only to find that they think you're not a harm to yourself or others mm-hmm. and you're on your way home. Mm-hmm. All for that to rehappen. The police are dealing with the same people.
You're talking about a situation that you're not even suicidal. I've had family members in the last 6 months mm-hmm. who are telling me, I am suicidal. Right. I need to go to the doctor. And 14 hours later, they were back home.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's somebody who said, I am afraid I am going to kill myself tonight. And they were like, oh, you're good.
So my sister, another story of more recent events. So I know what it feels like to be firsthand with a sibling who is struggling with addiction. Mm-hmm. I would call myself a nerd. My wife definitely calls me a nerd. So she bought me a scanner, a police scanner, EMS scanner for Medicine Hat before they changed the frequency. And I was able to listen to everything. Mm-hmm. So the day before my son was supposed to be born, I was in the living room watching TV and the radio toned, which means something big happened. Mm-hmm. So it was toned out code 99, which, if people don't know what that means that there's someone not breathing and not aware.
Not responsive.
Not responsive.
Yep.
So it toned out code 99 and it said my mom's address. So think about this. I'm sitting at my home. My wife's 9 months pregnant. My daughter's sitting there next to me. Mm-hmm. I hear someone at my house that I grew up in is not breathing and is dying. Mm-hmm. I stand up. I look to my wife. I say, Sonia, you got to get the kid out of here and you got to go because someone's dying at my house, at my mom's house right now. Mm-hmm. She goes, what do you mean? I said, it's code 99 at my mom's house. Dispatcher came back on, said 33-year-old, not breathing, not responsive due to opioid addiction. Mm-hmm. Now, my mother worked at the MassNap Police Service for 35 years. Mm-hmm. People know who she is. People know who I am there. People know who my sister are. Yeah. You could tell they were concerned. Mm-hmm. Police, fire, EMS show up. It's dead silence on the radio. At that point, I'm in tears. I'm bawling my eyes out and I'm thinking my sister is dead. Mm-hmm. Straight out. Mm-hmm. My sister's dead. She overdosed. It was the day. Mm-hmm. I was expecting this for 5 years. Today was the day. Mm-hmm. Dispatcher comes back on and says, any update? Because they ask for updates quite often. Mm-hmm. No one was given an update. So I pick up the phone, I call my mom's house, no answer, no answer, no answer. Finally, she answers. I said, Mom, is she alive? She goes, yeah, they got her. Mm-hmm. Narcan. Mm-hmm. Now, that is devastating. That was devastating to me. That's devastating to anybody who goes through that. But for the people who have lost, who actually lost their loved ones, I can't even fathom what they're going through. Mm-hmm. And this is happening on a daily basis. I remember listening to that scanner and hearing 4 to 5 times a day, police officers saving lives mm-hmm. with Narcan a day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There were 4 to 5 overdoses a night.
Yeah.
People don't know that in this city. It is such, this is, I think, what has happened to the city. It's getting destroyed and no one is stepping up and fighting it.
You know, we as a nonprofit, we ended up getting flack in the beginning. Mm-hmm. In fact, we have some people that still try and give us flack. One of the things they say is, well, you know, you're not professionals. Mm-hmm. You don't have certifications behind your name, right, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And my response is like, yeah, but nobody's really doing anything about it.
Sure.
And I know you got flack recently from some different people. Because you want it to be a community issue, because you're seeing an issue in your community, you want to deal with it.
Right.
And you getting flack because people are saying it's a Alberta problem. It's a provincial problem.
Right.
I've heard that several times from several different people who are running for city council.
Absolutely.
I see the comments. I think people forget that Facebook is quite public.
Yeah.
And we're like, we can see this, man. But what's crazy to me is I'm sitting here right now, and I want you to get into it right away here, is you have some great ideas for the city and what we could do.
Sure.
And where the money could come from. Mm-hmm. And what we saw was like, oh, we wanted to give men, and now we have for women as well, mm-hmm, a safe place to talk about their mental health concerns.
Sure.
A community resource where we can go to and say, hey guys, at the Inner Man, where do I go for community housing? Mm-hmm. Where do I go for food? Where do I go for X, Y, and Z? And we can point them in the direction they need to go. Mm-hmm. And so we have some very basic bases covered of what could happen and what we could potentially see expedited with the right program and systems in place.
Right.
Why don't you tell the listeners kind of what your ideas are?
And sure.
What would you like to see come to fruition if you became mayor?
Well, right now, like I said, we have, in my opinion, the professionals that can handle it. Obviously, we don't have enough, mm-hmm, which is an issue. We don't have enough doctors in medicine as well. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be an Alberta issue as well going forward.
Yeah. Yes, we just got doctors.
Yeah. We're right.
Force them back out.
Exactly. So what we need to do is, yes, these are funded by the province and the Canadian government, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. But what they're not doing is they're not listening to the people in our community. They don't know how we're suffering. They're not on the streets seeing what needs to be done, like the professionals here. So what I believe needs to happen is we need to have one building or one center where,
like a hub,
where we have Alberta Health Services, we have Canadian Mental Health Services, we have child services, we have all these available assistant programs and programs that already exist in Medicine Hat in one building. Mm-hmm. So imagine if you were sick, you had a sore throat, you go to walk in, you tell them your issue, you wait, you go see a doctor. Mm-hmm. If there was a service like that in Medicine Hat that was 24/7, where if you knew that you were suffering, you could go and get immediate help. You could see somebody immediately. Mm-hmm. That way it gets quick service to the people who are suffering, so they don't have to suffer any longer. Mm-hmm. Because when people are suffering with mental illness, if they have to wait any longer than, I would say, 48 hours, they're going to start self-medicating, mm-hmm, to stop the pain.
Yep.
Just like if you broke your leg, you're not going to wait 48 hours to start medicating yourself. If you're out in the woods and you broke your leg, you're going to find any way to make that feel better. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
What we need is to stop. It's too siloed. Everything is too siloed. We have individuals in this city, I know for a fact, that are going to multiple areas of town talking to mental health professionals, but hearing different things from all different mental health professionals. Mm-hmm. So this one person who's seeking help is hearing seven different things because mm-hmm they're not connected to each other.
Right. There's no system.
There's no system. There's no, oh, let me call, or instead of let me call, make you a three week appointment, it should be, let's walk across the hallway and talk to the person you need to talk to. So
now we have the left hand talking to the right hand.
Exactly.
Right. 3 week appointment would be an improvement.
Oh yeah. I mean, better than 3 months for sure.
Could you imagine, like, okay, so if I'm suffering from addiction, I can go speak to somebody about my addiction and we can get you lined up with a psychologist or a psychiatrist
right now.
Away. And you know, it might be a 3 month wait. For me, it was an 8 month wait.
Right.
But regardless, that person's going to meet that other person in person.
In person.
Right.
And if it's after 6 p.m., It doesn't matter.
Right. And
if it's now, 11 PM right. or if you
need to be somewhere,
we exactly.
can take you in person over to Fifth North
right.
and we can get you the help that you need.
We have the professionals in this center mm-hmm. that know what to do with you mm-hmm. no matter what's going on.
Totally. Well, I mean, I think I look at this plaza that we're in right here, right? We're beside McMahon.
Right.
And McMahon's one of the most established places in Minnesota
sure.
to get community resources. And, you know, we have, it is amazing talking to these fantastic individuals here. Mm-hmm. But I think like, okay, so what if somebody's dealing with addiction and they're at McMahon, you know, mm-hmm. and now they come to the Innerman for their peer meetings but where do they go to deal with their addictions problem or their financial problem,
sure.
their relationship.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And if everything, I look at a building I look at is building right by the hospital there. Medical Arts Theater. Yeah. Medical Arts building there.
Yeah, yeah.
Where they have the pharmacy. They used to have walk in there all the time.
Yeah,
there's multiple floors.
There's a peds clinic there.
Right. Yeah. So that would be a perfect example of what should be happening in this city.
Yeah.
You open the doors, they slide open, you see somebody, mm-hmm. how can we help you? Mm-hmm. This, and this. Okay. Someone's gonna see you right away.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
That's the way it should be. Just like a hospital, just like if you were to go in and if you broke your ankle, they're not telling you to come back in 3 months.
Yeah, but Tony, I'm going to play devil's advocate. Where's the money coming from, man?
It's coming. Well, where is it coming from now? It's coming from us.
Right.
And it's getting wasted. Mm-hmm. The last time I checked, I live in Medicine Hat, Alberta, Canada. Mm-hmm. I'm paying Alberta tax. Mm-hmm. I'm paying federal tax. Mm-hmm. We're all paying for this.
Right. Right.
It's getting wasted.
You have property tax. You have.
You bet.
Yeah. You have.
So
you pay for
anybody
gas.
Who's saying that this is a provincial problem, to me, is you're running away from our issues. Mm-hmm. You're blaming it on people that live in Edmonton. And naturally, people who live 6 hours away are not going to care as much as people who live right next to you.
Totally. Totally.
It doesn't make human sense.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Right? It doesn't. I'm a nice guy. I would consider myself a nice guy. I care about you two more than I care about someone in Edmonton right now. Mm.
Right.
Right. And why is that? Well, it's because it's my community.
Exactly.
Right. And they have their community and they
exactly.
should have leaders within their community.
100%.
Right. It's something we've noticed with the Innerman, right. Is like, dude, the amount of outreach workers and people in different communities that are like, hey, what are you doing? And when can you come?
Sure.
And yep. it's like, oh, we got to deal with Medicine Hat.
Right.
Just let us get it's been 10 months. Let's get our feet on the yep. ground here.
We are. And that's another issue with, this homelessness problem we have.
Wait, we don't have a homeless problem.
Oh,
we're the first
right, yeah.
homeless place yeah, in
Austin, Medicine Salt Hat. Lake City.
Right. People forget that the people who pay taxes in this city are not 65,000 people. Mm-hmm. We have maybe 30,000 people that pay taxes here. Mm-hmm. And when you have another leader say that we're going to be the first city in Canada to end homelessness, mm-hmm. if I was suffering homelessness, mm-hmm. the first stop I'm going is Medicine Hat. Mm-hmm. So I think it's very important that these people still get provided services, mm-hmm. but we have to start taking care of our own people first. Mm-hmm. And if you want to start looking at where the funding is going, I think some of it is going to people who should be taken care of where they came from, other Canadian cities, mm-hmm. Calgary, Edmonton,
Lethbridge. There's no hiding it anymore.
Right.
That some of these cities are giving them one-way bus tickets.
Like, absolutely.
That is like a legitimate fact.
They're taking that shuttle. Mm-hmm. I've heard stories. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cities are paying for that shuttle service to Medicine Hat. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, it came out in the States there a couple of years ago, what they were doing with people in Salt Lake. They were shipping them down to California.
America ships millions and millions and millions of homelessness mm-hmm. throughout the country a year.
Yeah. And we're doing the exact same thing here. You can't say, I lived in Calgary from 2016 till 2018, just about 2019. And, I watched the East Village become a tent city.
Right.
My brother is in Edmonton. He's watched where the behind the old football stadium, he watched it become tent city.
Yep.
It's like that happened in the last 5 years.
Exactly.
You can't tell me that, you know, these people aren't being shipped around. Right. So you're right. I think when we look at this.
And I don't, it's not like I want to all of a sudden say, no, you're not getting anything. You're not getting any help. That would be disrespectful. the last thing I want to do is disrespect anybody in this.
Well, city. We need to come up with Tony. We need to come up with a system.
We need right? to, what we need to do is first off, some of these people came here. They can't get back home. We don't have bus service anymore. Mm-hmm. Even if they wanted to leave, mm-hmm. how are you going
to
leave?
Right. So we need to take care of them.
We need to take care of them. Mm-hmm. We need to, if they want to go back home mm-hmm. to a Canadian city, let's make the calls and to the services that they have in those cities. So when they get back to that city, they're taken care of.
Right.
Right. I'm not saying dump them off on the highway.
Right.
I'm saying their cities mm-hmm. have the resources that we do, if not better.
Right.
And way better. From
there. Exactly.
Way better. So let's go home.
So yeah. go home. Mm-hmm. Let them take care of you. I want to, as mayor, take care of my population.
Well, and here's the thing. And if they want to stay here, that's great. Me and Shane were talking about this, about the homelessness. And I can't remember if it was on the podcast or not. Regardless, it was a great conversation because, okay, so what if there was a program in place that said, okay, we're going to give you housing, mm-hmm. but then we're going to get you employment,
sure,
basic employment.
Right.
And it's going to be incentivized and you're going to get government assistance. And it might be for 12 to 18 months
right.
that you're going to be in this program. Not just a house, not to
relearn,
just a job.
Relearn things.
Right. And get right. you back on your feet.
Absolutely. Here,
let's get you some credit. Let's build you some credit. Let's build you a system
yep.
that you can take and apply to your life right. now, regardless if you have mental illness, if you have addictions, we'll get you an actual program
yep.
that's going to cost money, mm-hmm. whether it's provincial, federal, or municipal. And we have to start putting it in place. Right. And the reason I was talking to Allison about this today, Alec Knodel, she's running for city council. And I said, it sounds rudimentary when I say it, but I need to explain it. You don't want a city full of losers. What I mean by that is you want a city full of winners. People are going to help each other out and succeed. So when somebody's suffering from addiction, you want them to succeed. And how are you going to get them to succeed? You put the program in place for their rehabilitation. You put a program in place for community assistance and government assistance. And then what you end up doing is you help them integrate back into the community without dealing with their addiction. Now they're recovering and now they have a system to go and fall back on. And right. that is how you create a system full of winners, right?
We need to be realistic here. There, it's very unlikely for any businesses right now mm-hmm. that aren't in Medicine Hat to come to Medicine Hat. Yeah. Mm. They're going to do the research. Mm-hmm. They're going to find out that we've had mass suicides, that we have a massive drug overdose and drug problem mm-hmm. and that we're going to take away our facilities and they're going to do research and they're going to find out that Medicine Hat right now is probably not the best place to move a company mm-hmm. because what's most important to them, their workers and their families.
Right.
And if there's no services here, mm-hmm. they're going to say no, they're going to pass us.
Yeah. So again, we want a town.
We need, yeah. it's not that we can decide if we have these services or not. We need these services. Mm-hmm. Every other city mm-hmm. in North America has these services. Mm-hmm. Why would we go the opposite of that?
Right.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense.
Totally, man. Totally. Shane?
No, I have to be careful.
I have to be careful too.
you guys have been having a pretty good conversation back and forth. So I've just been kind of absorbing it in and, you know, there's a lot of things that I'd like to say and a lot of things I'd like to put out there, but I can't.
For me or against me?
For you.
Okay.
For you. Good. I definitely appreciate everything that you're doing. And really, we've talked about a lot of good things today, and a lot of your good ideas that you have here.
There's a stigma that has to stop. Mm-hmm. This, I had it too. Like I said, we were talking earlier.
Yep.
Good luck getting me in my 20s to talk like I just did.
Right. Right.
Wouldn't happen.
And I guess if we're getting into the closing remarks side of things, for me, like what I would like to, for the listeners to realize and maybe kind of put everything together is, this is a man that's been a resident of Medicine Hat his entire life. He's been through a lot of his own internal struggles. He's overcome them. He's found ways to battle through. Mm-hmm. And he also is recognizing some of the major problems in this city. So, recognize all of these things. And, when it comes time to vote, put it out all, if that's something that's important to you, if that aligns with your values, and it should, in my opinion, because this is all very important things and it's what our city needs. I think that, this is the route to go. So,
well, with the right people, we're going to get through this. We are. Mm-hmm. I feel it.
Yeah, absolutely. I, when I think of when I think of politics, I think of community servers, you know, people who are willing to go above and beyond. And what we're seeing right now, and what I was having this conversation with today is we're in this weird dilemma in Medicine Hat. And that weird dilemma is we see a lot of the old talking heads, not that it's good or bad, but it's the same people.
Right.
And I think it's good to hit control alt delete and start fresh and get some fresh faces and some fresh voices and different ideas. And I think that, you know, your age, your experience, your struggles, it all comes to fruition. And, you know, for me, when I sit back and I listen to, politics, whether it's left or right, the cool thing about city politics is it's bipartisan.
Right. That's the thing is that I know for a fact in this age of politics with Alberta. And again, I've been called because I want to help people with mental illness. And I've been called left of left. I've never voted left in my life. I am not with any party right now because I'm not happy with any party right now.
Right.
And I think
quite disappointing. And as mayor, I know for a fact that most likely I'm going to have to go up to Edmonton as mayor and knock on some doors like the Minister of Health. And until he figures out that I'm not going to let these citizens suffer anymore, I'll stay up there as long as needed. I will do absolutely anything in my power now and as mayor to get the people of this city help. Period.
Yeah. An important thing to note here too is, people need to understand that a thought process doesn't make you lean a certain way politically.
Right.
I'm sick of hearing that from fucking everyone. I really am. So
it's so true.
You can be right leaning and still care about people's mental health.
Exactly.
And care about other people's well beings. So if people out there, you need to cut that out because it's getting ridiculous and it's not needed.
And here's the thing, like, don't you want your town and community to succeed?
And don't you want the money to stop being dumped into a fire and nothing happening? Like what I see as a conservative,
wrongful areas.
I'm a conservative. I'm fiscally conservative.
Right.
So what I see right now with all this money getting put into mental health is it's getting just put in the dumpster.
Yeah.
And not much is happening. And that as a conservative angers me. So you want to call me left, fine. But as a conservative fiscally, I don't see any results.
Right.
Yeah. And that's why something has to happen.
Totally. Totally. I want to see, I have four kids and I want them to be proud Hatters. And when I think of what I can do for my community, I know Shane's on the same page. That's why we started the Inner Man. That's why we're reaching out to representatives like yourselves, because you want like-minded people who are willing to succeed, talk about the vulnerable issues, talk about the hard issues, and say in a camera, on a podcast, or to the rest of the city that, like, I'm with you guys.
Right. We're all in this together.
Totally.
We really are.
And the only way to solve problems as a community is to come together as a collective.
Right.
So, Tony, with that being said, man, I truly appreciate you coming into our studio.
Absolutely.
And you did awesome.
Pleasure.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Amazing.
I was nervous.
I know you were.
No need to be. You did amazing.
This is a fantastic conversation. And again, Shane, any closing remarks?
I think I had said what I had to say. So,
I appreciate your time.
Vote for him.
Absolutely.
Yes, vote Tony Leahy.
Yes. For mayor. And tell the listeners where they can find you, man.
Well, right now, go to Facebook, Tony Leahy for mayor. You'll see my platform there. If you have any questions or concerns, call me, email me, text me.
Yeah, it's pretty easy.
My number's out there and I'll talk to you.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, I'll be throwing your Facebook and Instagram and whatnot in the show notes. With that being said, thanks everybody for listening. Thanks everybody for watching. Tony's on the right track of what we want for our city. And, he definitely has my vote. And, I think that there's a few individuals who are really going to help you succeed when you come to, become mayor. And, those individuals, I really hope get into city council because they're just as strong and opinionated and willing to fight for the vulnerable and the people of our community. So
well, I appreciate that.
I wish you the best of luck, my friend.
Thank you.
Let's go eat.
Yeah.